The House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development will come to order. Welcome, everyone. We are going to take up a very short matter, I hope, which is House Bill 40291, and I'll open a work session on House Bill 4029.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 4029.
Dash one amendments to House Bill 4029 have been moved. Is there a discussion?
I don't know if you want me to just clarify on the record what those are.
Please.
You'll recall at the hearing on this bill, the discussion was around changing the date that ODOT has to report from March to November. So the amendment just makes that one change, which more aligns it with when they actually have a sense of where projects are and how much money is available.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Is there a discussion? Seeing none. Is there objection? Seeing none. The 4029-1 amendment stated 125 of 12 are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4029 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. It's been moved. House Bill 4029 go to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral be rescinded. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, House Bill 4029 as amended is moving forward with a due pass recommendation. With that, I'll close the
carrier.
Oh, yes, see the carrier. Is there a volunteer as a carrier?
That'll be fine. I'll carry it.
Question that amendment.
Certainly, the co-chair did an excellent job of explaining that amendment. Oh, we have one.
Sure, that's fine.
Jim Sheehan will carry. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 4029 and we are everybody. You ready?
Yeah.
With that, I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 4040.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 4040 establishes the Oregon Growth Fund and the Oregon Growth Board. It would abolish the Oregon Growth Account and the Oregon Growth Account Board effective June 30th, 2013. The measure currently has an emergency clause and takes effect upon passage. We have in your packets two amendments. We have not received the fiscals or revenues on either amendment. The dash four revises the membership of the Growth Board, specifies that the delegation of duties must be pursuant to written agreement, directs adoption of rules to develop guidelines on leveraging and maximizing investments, deletes language excluding the Education Stability Fund, and amends ORS 244.050 to include the Oregon Growth Board, effective 7/1/12. We also have the dash six amendment, which we received from Legislative Council Office. They notified us in an email that because the measure contains a provision authorizing the board that it creates to certify businesses for tax advantages or tax credits, this in effect makes the bill measure regulating taxation and constitutionally cannot have an emergency clause. So the dash six amendment would replace the emergency clause with the clause making the measure effective on the 91st day after signing die, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Patrick. And with that, welcome, Senator and Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Tobias Reed, State Representative from District 27. Hopefully, a lot of this sounds familiar because we were with you not very long ago. So I intend to be very brief and let Senator Devlin and a number of others who can speak to the bill tell you in their own words why they what they think about it. As a very brief reminder, this bill is the result of conversations that we've had around the state with job creators and business leaders about how better to coordinate and connect capital with job creators. We had good participation and suggestions from around the state, and this gives us a chance to be much more flexible, much more collaborative and coordinated, and to create a system of economic development that is much more accountable. I'm pleased that we have a couple senators here and a variety of other people to come, and I will stand ready to try to assist in answering questions and facilitating the conversation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Which one of the senators would like to go first?
Yes, I think we have an order. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Chairman Hunt,
and Chairman Benz. My name is Richard Devlin. I am a senator from Senate District 19. I'd like to thank the members of the committee also for allowing me to testify here today in support of House Bill 4040, the Oregon Investment Act. I became interested in the Act through my work on the Ways and Means Committee, both during its earlier reiterations and during this session. As the Senate co-chair of the Ways and Means Committee, I've spent the last few months working with the House co-chairs trying to find ways to address the approximately $300 million decrease in forecasted revenue since the close of session. I only mention that because it's testimony to an economy that continues to struggle and a recovery that will be significantly slower than what we had hoped for. And while I know we remain subject to both national and international economic trends, I do believe we need to redouble our efforts to retain existing businesses, assist those who want to expand, and encouraging new businesses in the state. We have had some successes in the past, and I'd like to mention one. In 2003, Representative Berger and I and Chair Hunt were co-sponsors of House Bill 3613. This bill instructed the Oregon Investment Council to invest $100 million in emerging growth businesses and resulted in the creation of the Oregon Investment Fund. By 2010, the Oregon Investment Fund had invested nearly $160 million. But to show you what leverage can do, since the inception of the Oregon Investment Fund, the net impact to Oregon has been approximately $551 million of capital invested by the Oregon Investments Funds and co-investors in Oregon and Pacific Northwest companies. As positive as this has been, we all know historically our economic development expenditures have not been always as successful. We could be leveraging far more private money into our businesses. Often the funding that we have created is segregated into a number of separate funds, each with their own strict criteria, administered independently without any coordination between agencies and without any clearly defined objectives. This bill, I think, can strengthen the business environment by ensuring that our limited resources are utilized effectively to improve and expand our economy. By consolidating and coordinating economic development activities, we'll be able to respond quickly and to prioritize those opportunities. It will also allow us to simplify our processes and better quantify our outcomes. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I will be relatively short, only simply to encourage you to support this act, support this legislation. I believe it is important to businesses in Oregon and it is important for the long-term well-being of our economy.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Telfer.
I'm Chris Telfer, Senator from District 27, also known as Sunny Central Oregon. Good morning, Co-Chair Hunt and Co-Chair Benz and members of the committee. I think Senator Devlin gave a great background on leveraging as well as Representative Reed. You know, I think we all can all agree that creating jobs in the state of Oregon is of the utmost importance. You know, much of our budget issues would be disappearing if we had Oregonians back to work and supporting their families. And, you know, currently we have various programs throughout the state in regards to helping businesses grow, create jobs, and economic development. They're very scattered. And one of the things that House Bill 4040, the Oregon Investment Act, does is it coordinates all these efforts. And with that coordination, and we can get some uniform metrics, better accountability, so that the legislators and the public have a better idea of what's working and what's not. So I think, as well as what's already been said, I think what's of the utmost importance is coordinating the efforts of economic development in one area so we have better accountability and better coordination. I would encourage you all to approve and pass this bill to the floor for a vote and help Oregonians get back to work. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for this panel? Yes,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lindsay.
Thank you. Thank you for testifying. And Senator Telfer, you said that they're scattered everywhere. And I sent an email to, I think, the co-chairs and the sponsors of the bill. I'd like to identify the scattered remnants and specifically identify what is proposed to be dumped into one bucket. That's I don't know if you have that available to you. I don't know if someone else will be testifying at some point. I'd like to have a little bit more specifics.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lindsay, I think you're making a case for the bill.
Yeah.
That is indeed a lot of the motivation for this bill, to identify and find those opportunities. I don't think we have a good list, and indeed that's further justification for why it's needed. But think as an example. Think about, just to give one anecdotal example, the Department of Agriculture has a program to promote the export of Oregon agricultural products. We probably all agree that's a good thing. But is the Department of Agriculture, for example, doing a good job coordinating with the Infrastructure Finance Authority to make sure that the necessary infrastructure is in place, with the ports to make sure that the ports could handle increased traffic of agricultural products. It's not to say that there are programs that should be ended, though there might be, but merely to make sure that those things are better coordinated and that they're talking to each other. So your question is a good one. I don't think we have a good answer at this point, and that points to the need for the bill.
Follow-up. So are you saying that we cannot identify these things without the bill?
I think, Mr. Chair, Representative Lindsay, that the bill will help that process move forward and that we'll be able to identify opportunities. I think Senator Devlin wanted to say something, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lindsay, I believe it is possible to identify them, and they will appear, obviously, in the Oregon Business Development Department, the Department of Agriculture. There are programs related within the Department of Energy. I think if you look deeply enough, you will find them in probably four or five other areas. I think the intent of the bill, though, is not necessarily to put these all into one particular agency. It's to coordinate the efforts. Let me give you an example that I think is something that, from a budget standpoint, is coming back to haunt us. And I have to be very careful here to be, how would I say it, neutral in how I present this. We have a problem now that we are experiencing with the Small Energy Loan Program, in which I believe the Department of Energy has expertise in energy, but does not have enough expertise in making business decisions about what are wise investments and what are not. And for that reason, I think we will be seeing in the next year or two several more of those loans, some of them relatively substantial, go into default. That will mean in a program that actually is not supposed to put money at risk, that has never had any general fund money appropriated to it, will actually require some general fund appropriations to keep that program viable. I don't think that would have happened had this coordination had existed and people were looking at this not only from the standpoint of expanding the energy sector in this state, but also looking at this from a proper and prudent business standpoint of whether the investments made sense, whether they were backed by significant enough capital not to put those dollars at risk. We sometimes put dollars at risk in economic development, but we do it because we know what the risks are. I think sometimes we have entities that put dollars at risk and they do not have the business expertise to make those decisions. I think what we're hoping to do with this bill is to make sure that every dollar that the state invests is spent well and that gets us the maximum possible return.
Yes, Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Devlin, you mentioned House Bill 3613 from 2003. One of the major differences between that bill and this bill, as you may recall, the treasurer at the time was opposed to the bill. And it was a very fascinating process to get that bill passed in that environment. In fact, I vividly remember, it might have even been in this room, the bill came off committee 4-3, two Democrats and two Republicans voting for it. And the case was being made that there aren't enough valuable Oregon enterprises, Oregon entrepreneurs out there that merit investment of state resources, which I just found to be a crazy, fascinating argument at the time. But I really appreciate the fact that this time, very different circumstance, we have the active partnership and leadership of the treasurer in moving this forward. It makes a much smoother process. And fortunately, I mean, what a difference 10 years makes. We now have a collective sense that there are lots of valuable Oregon small businesses and entrepreneurs that merit investment of these dollars. So appreciate your work on this.
Thank you. Just to follow one last question before we bring up folks that want to testify in favor of this bill and against it. The question is, how do you take these really good ideas, the ones that we've just heard a little bit about, and make sure that this governing board actually works over the next year for the purpose of achieving what we just heard from the three of you? In other words, where is that instruction going to come from? Because when one looks at the bill, it's fairly broad in statement. Thus, maybe you could share with us how you would see the board working and how this oversight concept, which I think is excellent, and this much greater care exercised in investing state dollars achieved. How do you perceive that happening?
Mr. Chair, perhaps I can start that, and my colleagues can fill in. I think you've put your finger on one of the interesting challenges in constructing this bill, because on the one hand, we want to be as specific as we can so that the legislature can consider it, so that there is a good understanding of what we're trying to do. On the other hand, we want it to be as flexible as possible so that we're not unintentionally precluding smart ideas or smart policy. So I think the unifying theme here is for the board to look for opportunities to consolidate and make more efficient, more responsive, more nimble, more accountable our economic development strategies and efforts. I think that as the bill outlines a fairly specific procedure to identify the people who will serve on that board, the majority and minority leaders in both houses of the legislature will have a role. The governor will make the appointments and so on. So I think we'll have an opportunity to talk with those people who might like to serve on the board about the legislative intent to be quite broad and flexible in the charge, connecting capital with job creators in the most efficient and effective way possible.
And if I understand it correctly, we will be receiving that report about a year from now, right back here, so we can have another opportunity to see if it's as we hope it to be. So my hope is that those of us that are interested in this thing actually working would let the board know exactly what we expect them to do, how we're going to do it, so that when they do come back, it's something that we're all, we actually get what we're hoping.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, and I would hope that the members of the legislature who are interested, just as you say, take an active role in the work of the board in between now and then.
Representative Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And how does this new single umbrella compare to other states, especially our, I'd probably look to Washington, Idaho, Utah area, Mountain West states?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lindsay, I think we're trying to take a lot of the lessons from those states. Some of those states have done similar things, and we've also taken lessons from some other states a little bit further away. Ohio has had great success with their Third Frontier program. State of Utah has done well with their fund-to-funds approach, a number of other states. So we're trying very hard to use the best practices and best approaches of other states.
Further questions for this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair Hunt, Mr. Chairman, I want you to note that I did bring a tie, although I...
Our second panel, if we'll actually, we have four. see if we can get everybody up here. Mr. Zellers, Mr. Pagesa, Mr. Tai, and Mr. Parker. And I think we can bring another chair up. And wait, let's get up here. Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Rye. I'm sorry.
It was President Tai.
President Tai. Welcome, gentlemen. For purposes of this committee, you'll find we will stay much more alert if you don't read to us. If you don't read to us. So if you just talk to us, that will be good. Otherwise, those suffering from Super Bowl difficulties, post-Super Bowl difficulties, won't be so likely to nod off. So please don't read to us. Please talk to us. So who'd like to go first? And you are.
Nitin Rai, I'm CEO of First Insight and President of Tai, Oregon.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson Benz and Hunt and members of the committee.
And also, you don't need to lead into the microphone. They're perfectly, they're extremely sensitive. Thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity for you to invite me to speak today, testify in support of HB 4040. I support this bill because I think it will allow the state to consolidate a lot of investment efforts, provide the leverage, and allow for really the state to take a leadership role in job growth and economic development. I represent an organization of entrepreneurs in Portland. We are about 30 mentors, charter members. We have invested over $3 million into 20 different startups in the last 18 months. And that has created about 250 jobs. Imagine if there was support from the state to create 100 of those companies and what kind of impact that would have. We're really leading the way in creating an entrepreneurial ecosystem, and I believe this can be replicated across the state. We have great institutions, educational institutions, all up and down the I-5 corridor, all the way down to Ashland, Corvallis, OIT, and Klamath Falls. And we focus in the technology space, so technology companies can be anywhere. They don't necessarily have to be in an urban area. And we understand that this bill is broad, but I think there is a great opportunity today, given the state of the economy, where the state can really partner with groups like us and other capital groups to seed these companies and create a new ecosystem. And that will attract more venture capital, which is what's needed from the outside to come into the state. And it's already happening. I think last year, about $140 million worth of venture capital came in. So this is a small effort, but we're, you know, seeding companies and we're making an impact. I think there's an opportunity to hire these graduates from these universities and seed local companies. So having said that, you know, again, I'd like to extend my support for HB 4040. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll reserve our questions until the panel is finished testifying. So who'd like to be next?
I can go next.
Please.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, chairs and members of the committee. My name is Neil Zellers. I'm an independent consultant working for the Oregon Community Foundation. I'm nearly finished a four-month-long study of the Oregon capital ecosystem, financing for businesses. It's not perhaps as broad as all the state programs might, all the capital sources that the state might have, but it does include some of those sources of capital. I'd love to share a few of those findings with you this morning. I believe you have a handout in front of you. You can follow along. We'll dispense with the PowerPoint. So, as I mentioned, the study was to assess and describe gaps in Oregon's capital ecosystem. And to do that, I've spoken with about 90-plus capital providers and experts across Oregon. And those are on the state side, and then also a number of private capital providers, venture capital funds, private equity funds, angel investors, economic development districts that operate revolving loan funds across the state. I gathered data around assets and transaction sizes and the stages and sectors in which these investment funds invest. So I just want to get to my findings very quickly, as we only have a little time. The key takeaways are that there are multiple gaps in the capital ecosystem across the state, and I've identified just a few, I think, and I'll get to those in just a moment. Another few other items that I'd like to impart are that the capital ecosystem is pretty complex and fluid. It's a dynamic system that is challenging to manage, and in order to do so requires some constant vigilance in order to drive that additional economic development, which I think we're all speaking about today. Another finding that I found is that human capital is a huge component of this well-functioning capital ecosystem. That comes from our universities, which we've spoken about. That's those entrepreneurs that are starting small businesses and those entrepreneurs that are hoping to get venture financing and build very large businesses. It's also a matter of the investor, the human capital of the investor, the quality investor that seeks that quality business to invest in, and not just deploying capital for economic development, but with good business acumen, if you will. And then lastly, I would say that there are tremendous opportunities, I believe, for economic development and investment returns, but it does require collaboration and coordination. It's something I think that many other folks have already specified. So on page 4, you'll see the gaps that I've found. I'll run through them quickly, and please ask me questions if you need clarity on these. And as I mentioned, the capital ecosystem is fluid and dynamic, so these may shift through time. But one is there's a gap that I found in seed stage capital, generally for non-software businesses, for investments, say, of a couple hundred thousand. We've got the Portland Seed Fund and Pi making great small investments in very capital-efficient businesses that have the opportunity to scale. These tend to be software businesses. And then we've got the Oregon Angel Fund, another great entity that's making investments on the $500 to $2 million range. So we've got this gap in the middle where businesses that need money in order to develop those prototypes and products have a very tough time getting financed. Another gap, life sciences, probably the least funded sector in the state. There are some big challenges in terms of getting that industry rolling, and there's a number of folks wanting to do that, and I think probably great opportunity there, but not a lot of, really no formal capital to do that, in the state at least. Clean technology and sustainability. There are sources of capital here, but it's pretty underdeveloped in terms of the capital ecosystem, and I think it's a little uncertain as to whether that capital will be there in the future. Another reason for stewardship of the Oregon's capital ecosystem. Then I would say there's another very attractive opportunity, which is growth capital for smaller, privately held Oregon businesses that have bootstrapped themselves over the years. These businesses tend to be smaller than are attractive to big private equity shops. You know, perhaps they're $500,000 to a few million in revenue. But they've got proven product and proven cash flows and have an opportunity to grow. And I think that could add a lot of jobs. That's something I think that would be compelling to folks across the state. Small manufacturers. There are small manufacturers that can't get lines of credit to expand their businesses. And we all understand the situation we're in with the financial crises and the ability of banks to lend to new businesses that perhaps don't have the track record. The state perhaps could lend a role or play a role in helping those businesses qualify, whether that's through programs that help train them and get their financials in order to be able to go to a bank, or perhaps providing some of that capital. Well, that's not my place to say, of course, but those businesses, perhaps it's a small mill operator that's just got an order for, it's twice as large as the last order you did. That mill operator can't necessarily go out and buy the materials that that mill operator needs in order to do that bigger job, constraining their growth. Another item is what has been called sort of the formerly banked businesses that, you know, were going strong when the financial crisis hit, economic recession, et cetera, have been strained by lower sales, real estate prices collapsing, the values of their business declining. They suddenly become more challenged in terms of borrowing from banks, lines of credit, borrowing in terms of reinvesting in the business. They've struggled and made tough decisions to stay alive. And now quite a number of these businesses are at a point where they may throw in the towel. And I think it presents a real opportunity for the state to reinvest, help those businesses through that last leg. Perhaps it's a refinancing, perhaps it's an investment of some sort that can help them expand and grow through a recovery. And of course, we need prudent financial decision making in this case, as with all of these cases. And then finally, I would say microloan capital is relatively sparse across the state. So quite a bit more of it in Portland. And there are microloan funds being developed by, you know, very strong nonprofit organizations across the state, as well as the state through Business Oregon. But more capital is needed, better training programs so that those entrepreneurs are very worthy of that capital and go deploy it in a way that makes sense and will generate the returns for those investors. On page 5, I just love to give you a snapshot of the types, this is a graphic illustration of some of the types of analyses I've done. You'll see here, these are private investment funds that I interviewed. Along the vertical axis, you'll see the geographic focus of those funds. So on the lower left, Oregon specific, Northwest, Western U.S., U.S. plus. And then along the x-axis, the bottom axis there, you'll see the stage of business. So seed stage, going from concept, that napkin idea, to prototype or product. And then you've got early stage venture, which is where you're getting formal venture capital. You get later stage venture, those are the sort of the follow-on financing rounds, and then growth. And then you'd also have buyout here, but I haven't shown it because it messes with the illustration story. But the takeaway is that there are a number of early stage venture funds that are not headquartered in Oregon and don't exclusively focus on Oregon. And they're grouped in the early stage space. And this alludes to one of the gaps that I spoke of, the seed stage. So you'll see in the lower left-hand corner in Oregon and seed, there are a few funds that are investing there. And that somewhat illustrates the gap that I'm talking about. But you have to marry that with the qualitative information. And then also another gap that's illustrated a little bit here is those small growth companies. So left in that growth box, those small privately held businesses that are perhaps going a little bit slower, have an opportunity to grow much more rapidly and expand. We'll move on to last slide, which is a comparison. It's a per capita comparison of investment dollars between Oregon and Washington, broken out by stages there. You can see Oregon in blue and Washington in orange. And you can see that while over the last, I believe it's 10 years, Oregon companies have seen over $2.1 billion in private investment, on a per capita basis, we still dramatically lag Washington, particularly in the early stages, if you look at the relative per capita dollars. The story is the same if you look at it by sector, et cetera. I hope that's been helpful, and welcome any questions that you may have.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. Yes.
Before we move on, can I just ask a quick question?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Thanks. Thank you for this. Very compelling. I've read through this. Very compelling. You said that there's a dearth of private investors or good quality investors here in Oregon. I agree. Would you not agree that making our investment income tax more comparable, more competitive with other states would attract those quality investors here to Oregon? For example, Washington's?
Much lower. It's a good question. I haven't focused deeply on that topic, but I can say from my research that whatever we can do to attract investors to deploy more capital wisely will be a net positive thing.
I agree.
Thank you very much.
Of course.
Go ahead.
Yes. My name is Malin Bigasa, and I'm the president and CEO of Centerpoint Community Bank. And thank you for inviting me here today, Representative Vance.
Glad you're here.
And co-chair, Mr. Hunt. Our bank in Hood River is a very small community of 6,000 people in the community. We started up this bank 4 years ago. 85% of the investments to start this bank came locally. And our sole purpose of the bank is to help build the local economy. We have been very successful the last 4 years. We're probably, our ratios, for most of the ratios that banks measure themselves, we are probably close to the top, if not on the top, on most of them. We have very competent management staff for loans. One of the things that we do have a challenge with, though, is that we have loan requests that are beyond our reach. Our current size, we have a loan, legal loan limit of $2 million. So anytime there is loans request for greater than $200 million, we have, or $2 million, we have to find a participant bank to before we can make the loan. We currently have two loans that are in that condition. The first one is a very successful auto dealership. They need a $2.6 million loan. We can take $2 million of it, and we need to participate out $600,000. We have looked throughout the Oregon banks, and we could not find a participant. It appears that we will have one from Seattle area that will take this participant. But it would have been nice to be able to keep those dollars churning within Oregon. We have another loan, which is the local hospital in the Dalles, that need a $3 million loan. Again, the max we can do is $2 million. So we need to find a participant to handle the following difference, which is $1 million. I'm not quite sure how this all fits into this bill, but when you called me the other day, I explained a little bit of this. I think it would be very helpful if there was some type of a agency to help build our communities with allowing some more flexibility and participations.
Thank you very much. And we will have some questions, I think, but we'll listen to our last participant first.
Good morning, Chairman Benz, Chairman Hunt, members of the committee. Nat Parker, and I'm the CEO of a small software startup in Portland called Globe Sherpa. We're developing a smartphone app that lets you ride public transit just using your phone. You won't have to go to the ticket machine and stick your credit card in, wait for it to come out, watch as the bus goes by. You can just do it all right from your phone. It's pretty simple if you ask me. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and speak to you today. I do support HB 4040 because entrepreneurship is what I'm passionate about, and I think that Oregon has a unique opportunity to grow more companies like mine. I quit my job as a project manager at a renewable energy company in Portland 2 weeks ago, and it was one of the scariest and one of the best days of my life, walking away from a good job at a time when the economy is rocky. I don't take it for granted. But I did it because I have an opportunity to grow my own business. We're actually out hiring two people right now. None of this could have been possible without the support, the capital, the mentorship of this guy right here, Ty Oregon, as well as the Portland Seed Fund, who's participating in helping us close a seed funding round. It's going to give us the money to grow our business and expand. I'd like to say that I sit before you as a successful example of how this works. I'm sort of at the starting end of that, but I'd like to come back and report on my progress later. We are working with TriMet in Portland on this program, and we hope to expand it across the state. Listen, why do people come to Oregon? They come here because it rocks. It's beautiful. The people are cool. The food is great. You get outdoors. The same should be true of starting a business here. And so I think to the extent that you look at HB 4040 as an opportunity to attract capital, companies, talent, this is something that, you know, this is the American dream. And so Oregon should be behind this 100%. I think a couple distinctions are noteworthy here. One is you don't have to be a software guy to be a beneficiary of this program. You don't have to be in the urban bubble of Portland's urban growth boundary. There's innovation happening all across this state. You know, the example of a small mill owner, for example. There are all kinds of opportunities that this program could benefit. So I'd ask you to look at it as something that helps all Oregonians. But I will tell you that, you know, if you have a professional management team that looks at companies that have strong fundamentals, that have a good growth story, you manage risk and you diversify that risk across a portfolio, you can make money. And we can return not only profits to the state of Oregon, but more jobs, more talent, and more cool companies. So thank you for the opportunity to be here, and hope to come back and let you know how we're doing.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. Thanks. Questions for this panel? Yes,
Mr. Chair. I don't know the answer. I don't know if you know the answer, but does TIE or Portland Seed Fund participate in or receive any assistance from the Oregon Growth account?
TIE is basically an organic group of investors. We don't receive any monies from the Oregon Growth Fund. Portland Seed Fund has, and some of us have actually invested in the Portland Seed Fund as well.
Okay, thank you.
So I have a question, any one of the four of you may answer it, but the question would be, why should the state be doing any of this when the private sector is going to reap the rewards? Why should the state be involved in any of this? And whichever one of you wants to take a shot at that may do so.
Well, there's a really strong reason. As Neil pointed out, there's a huge gap right now in the seed funding. So we're turning away a number of companies that are looking for that $200,000 to $500,000 worth of investment to get the company from, you know, the $25,000 that PI or PSF might put in to just get these guys started for 90 days. And that amount of money creates about 10 to 20 jobs and new jobs. And if these companies are obviously have mentors like us that are giving them help for no pay, it's all volunteer, what this does is it increases the chance of these entrepreneurs succeeding. The next level from that $500,000 would be another, if they grow, let's say they need more money, they become very attractive to venture capitalists. And most of the venture funding in this state is not homegrown. It's all coming from outside, from Seattle, from the Bay Area. So that's what we're looking at. So, yes, you know, is there a return to the state? Yes, if this company succeeds, and like Matt was saying, you know, you manage a portfolio. So some companies obviously are going to succeed, some may not succeed. But what you've done is you've seeded the ecosystem with a large number of companies that are creating jobs, and these are not low-paying jobs. It's $56,000 to $60,000 a year. So some of the money is coming back to the state in form of taxes. So, you know, and I've seen this work in other areas. I've seen it work in India, which is where I'm originally from. And India has grown 9% a year in the last 8 years. And part of it has been, you know, there have been tax credits for outside companies to come in, outside money to come in. They've gotten billions of dollars in outside investment because they made it very attractive for small companies to grow. And it's part government, part private.
I would just add, I completely agree. There's a tremendous opportunity not only for the private sector, of course, but for economic development and returns to the state in terms of monetary returns and jobs. But I would add that I think it's we often think of the private sector as being efficient and you know, this is their role. But the truth of the matter is that while private markets for capital are efficient, they are not perfectly efficient. There are a set of tools that they have to deploy capital, and those tools are not always sufficient to deploy capital in, say, small niches where a big fund can't come in and use its strategy to invest in XYZ. And that's where this flexibility and innovation becomes possible through an act like this. The state can find those opportunities and finance those businesses that wouldn't otherwise be financed by private markets, generate returns, and create jobs that wouldn't have been created otherwise.
Can I make one short statement?
Please. Which
is, why should the state participate in this? In my mind, it's about leadership. It's about the fact that you, as our legislative body, have the opportunity to help shape the direction of where growth happens in this economy. What's important to Oregon? What will grow the most jobs? What uses our core competencies that we have here that other states don't? So you can help drive that. That's a big part of this. And the other thing is, you will make a return on your investment. You will make some money, and we're going to make sure that you do.
Mr. Begesa, I want to move away from the optimism of the entrepreneur to the nuts and bolts of banking. And so I think you mentioned to me that Oregon missed out on an opportunity for what you call the gold-plated loan by virtue of not being able to find local or state of Oregon participants. Perhaps you could share with us why that would make any difference to us. Why, I think you mentioned to me the loan actually went to Washington and was made out of Washington.
Whenever there's a loan that we miss out on, the income from those loans then goes to the bank or the company that's financing it, and that's rebuilt then in Washington rather than Oregon. So the more we can keep the money in Oregon, all builds Oregon rather than building another state. The wind turbines that we lost out on, that went actually to Montana. Very, very successful. It's a golden loan. You could not lose on it. But it went to Oregon because we're just too small. We couldn't do it. And you can't find participants. You'd have to have so many. So I think it's a matter of keeping the money local, meaning within the state, helps build the economy. Our little bank now employs 20 people. And the loans that we have put out locally, which is over 90% are local loans, that has helped the growth within our communities. So it's all job creation by keeping it within rather than pushing it out.
Thank you. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The last few questions about and statements about the role that the state plays and the opportunities and leadership are all things that I agree with. And it prompts me to just make one quick point of clarification for the benefit of the committee, which is to say that as the bill contemplates it, the decisions would be made by private sector members of the board. And I think the state has a role to play, but those decisions and the identification of those competitive advantages and opportunities would be done by the private sector.
Further questions on this panel? Representative Lindsay.
Just a quick question. Mr. Rye, are you a qualified investor?
Yes.
And are you a resident of Oregon?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions from this panel? Thank you very much. We very much appreciate your travel to Salem today. With that, we have panel number three, Elia Wasson, Gene Wheatpalm, and John Mullis.
I will go first.
Please.
Co-Chair Benz and Co-Chair Hunt and committee, thank you for allowing me to lend my support to House Bill 4040. And for the record, my name is Malia Wasson, and I am president of U.S. Bank here in Oregon in Southwest Washington. I'm also the current chair of Oregon Business Council. You have heard a lot of testimony today about the efficiency that this represents in terms of the coordination of the resources that are currently fragmented. What I want to say is that your jobs as legislators, you know, you can't create jobs technically, but you can create an environment where jobs can be created. And I think that's what this bill does, is there are many companies that don't have access to traditional forms of capital. You heard about that earlier. And it is important for Oregon to be able to more on the menu, if you will, and that's what this bill does, is it coordinates resources, but it also creates more programs, different kinds of programs that involve the matching of capital dollars from the private sector. So it is an important menu of capital products, if you will, that you would be creating. Also, we, business community, appreciated Treasurer Wheeler's and the legislators' outreach to the business community about this bill, and we very much believe it's important for the economic development efforts in Oregon. We want Oregon to become as best as possible at economic development. We also appreciate the accountability measures that are in the bill, and that just demonstrates your commitment to fiscal responsibility. And then lastly, I think I'm uniquely qualified to tell you that this is not a Bank of Oregon. The Oregon Bankers Association and Independent Community Banks of Oregon all have said that they endorse this bill, and that would not happen if this was a Bank of Oregon. So,
thank you. Jean.
Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Jean Wheat-Palm. I'm president and CEO of Valley Credit Union here in Salem and chair of the Northwest Governmental Affairs Committee for the Northwest Credit Union Association. I'm here representing 85 credit unions, both state and federal, chartered here. In times of challenging financial service industry, it's important to understand how credit unions are unique and different, and why we remain extremely popular financial alternative for 93 million Americans. Credit unions are not-for-profit, financial cooperatives, democratically controlled by our members and operated for purposes of promoting thrift, credit at competitive rates, and providing financial services to our members. Many credit unions provide services to support community development. Over 38% of Oregonians are members of credit unions. You'll find them from every walk of life, from cattle ranchers in Central Oregon to mill workers in Willamette Valley to fishermen on the Oregon coast to high-tech workers around the state. With more than 1.4 million members, Oregon Credit Unions strive to preserve a legislative climate that recognizes their unique structure and mission. With our background in local communities here in Oregon, credit unions have firsthand experience in deploying capital locally. We continue to see how our members are affected by local economy. We believe that the Oregon Investment Act can build on the public-private partnerships that are currently working and improve them by adding leverage from private sector so we can expand and diversify efforts to grow and improve our communities. We believe in coordinating these efforts so the financial community can better address capital gaps in types of investments and across sectors. This will help financial institutions meet the needs of their communities and will also be beneficial for institutions looking to engage in such partnerships. The Act builds on the success and adds some sanity to existing economic development infrastructure. We look forward to participating in the Oregon Growth Board, and we urge your support of House Bill 4040.
Thank you. Gene John.
Good morning, Chair Bentz, Chair Hunt, members of the committee. My name is John Molis. I represent the Oregon State Building Trades Council. And our organization is very pleased to support House Bill 4040. This seems to be a very well thought out effort to coordinate and aggregate state economic development efforts and monies. We recognize this is not an infrastructure bank, but we're still very pleased to support this effort. We believe it will help incent job creation, it will help Oregon businesses grow and prosper, and will provide opportunities for Oregonians to go back to work and to support themselves and their families. So we're very much in support of House Bill 4040, and thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick statement. I'd just like to thank all of you for all the work that you do to keep this economy going. You really are the glue that keeps us together and keeps the blood flowing through this economy. Without you, the entire economy would collapse. Thank you.
I guess the phrase used earlier, access to traditional sources of capital, one might ask, if one spent a lot of his time spending working for banks, foreclosing on bad loans, which I've done, why?
So you're talking about you.
I'm talking about me.
Okay.
And particularly in the 80s, less so now. But the question would be, why should the state get into this business of assisting in making loans in non-traditional areas? What is it that would prompt a state to want to start engaging in this type of investment, knowing there's this high degree of risk?
Sure.
And knowing also that for some reason our traditional sources of capital aren't making those loans.
Mm-hmm. So I think the premise is, if you buy into it, and I do, Oregon needs to pay attention to the companies that are coming up from infancy on, emerging companies, and that is a place where in that sector, they don't access traditional forms of capital. And yes, it's riskier, but it is an important sector for the state to pay attention to, and you're already doing it now. And so this gives you the opportunity to do it even more effectively and efficiently to make sure that that's a vibrant part of our business sectors so that they can grow up and become bigger companies and bring more jobs to the state of Oregon. It is probably the place that needs the most help.
Either of the other two want to respond to the question? No? No? Well, thank you very much. And no other questions for this panel? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait.
Is this our last panel, or do we have another?
No, we have two more, actually.
Oh, good. I'll hold off.
Okay. Thank you. Next group of three, Ann Hannes, John Charles, and is that James? James Winters.
Thanks. Hi, my name is Ann Hannes. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties, and I'm also testifying on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. My testimony is being distributed to you now. We believe in the overall purpose of what is trying to be accomplished in House Bill 4040, and that is to encourage business investment as well as increase resources to local governments and state agencies to advance economic development. Cities and counties have been close partnerships with business as well as the state in furthering economic development by providing tax incentives, technical assistance, building infrastructure, and permitting projects. And since partnerships are so important in trying to have an economic development be a success, we urge that the governor and the legislature make appointments to the Oregon Growth Board that have expertise also in local government experience as well as economic development experience. We'd also like to place on the record that it's the intent of the legislature, and we hope you agree, that 4040 would allow the Oregon Growth Board, through a written agreement, to contract with local governments and local economic development entities. So this could allow, for example, economic development districts and local governments working in concert with regional solutions boards to provide funding to encourage business investment and job creation and retention. We also recognize that this bill is written very broadly to allow as much flexibility, but on the same token, we ask that over the next year, you look at outlining clearly roles and responsibilities of the different agencies and boards and commissions, the Oregon Growth Board and Business Development Commission, for example, in order to minimize conflicts and emphasize cooperation, collaboration. Thank you for the opportunity, and we look forward to working on this over the next year.
Thank you. John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Charles with Cascade Policy Institute. I'd like to share a slightly different perspective this morning than what you've heard so far. In my own view, there are two basic approaches to improving economic opportunity in the state. One would be fundamental reform to lower tax and regulatory barriers in the state that would make it a more inviting place for investment capital so that the trillions of dollars of investment capital circling the globe at any given point, large parts of that would begin to migrate to Oregon just simply because it was a great place to invest. Well, we're not doing that with this bill. The other approach is to take public money and create sort of pseudo venture capital funds and hope that we can overcome these barriers. I'm pretty skeptical of that latter approach, and it's not particularly new. We've been doing it. If you haven't read the most recent annual report from the Oregon Growth account, you might want to call it up on your laptops. You can do it right now. It's dated January 31st. It's just a little two and a half page memo. January 31st, 2011 is when it was written. And there's a couple parts in here that have caught my eye since I read it a year ago, which is that the Oregon Growth Account's first commitment was in 1999. The fund has committed $63.7 million into various investments, and its internal rate of return to date of this memo was minus 7.9%. And then within that, there's a legislatively mandated subaccount known as the Oregon Resource and Technology Development subaccount. That's within the Oregon Growth Account. This is a mandate to, quote, make seed capital investments in emerging growth businesses. I can hardly think of a riskier thing to do. And it shows up in their negative 17.8% internal rate of return. So since we already have an Oregon growth account with a long track record, not just 2 or 3 years, but over a decade, and this bill creates something similar to it, not all that different that I can tell. Before you go into a work session, you might want to get the authors of this memo in front of you and probe a little deeper about what happened and what you could learn from that experience before you sort of recreate it in another thing called the Oregon Growth something. And I'm not saying that these people are incompetent or they don't mean well. Of course they mean well. And I'm sure they're very competent. But you know, I've made investments. I do a lot of my own investments, and I've made mistakes that I wish I could forget about. But I went into it with eyes open, and it was all on me. It's all the risk is mine, and all the reward is mine. The problem with these kinds of state-sponsored funds is there's not any skin in the game, really, for the people making the decision. And the risk-reward for taxpayers is they bear most of the risk. In the context of this bill, for instance, on page 1, line 20, as part of the definition of economic development, it includes that you could put investments into, quote, the decline of businesses. Okay, so let's just say Eastman Kodak wasn't located in Rochester. It was located in Oregon. It's a great, wonderful company that somehow in the last 8 or 9 years lost touch with the market, stopped producing their iconic Kodachrome, a film that I used to love, and their stock is trading below a dollar, and I think they're in bankruptcy proceedings now. And if they were in Oregon and they were well-loved and producing iconic products, under this bill, this fund could invest in it because they're a declining business. Now, what would guide you to either do or not do that, and who bears the risk, who bears the reward? I mean, once you go down that road, where do you stop? That's the problem with this approach, as I see it. And again, it's not new. Senator Devlin tactfully hinted to the emerging problems coming forward with the Small Energy Loan Program. You could go down the line, Energy Trust of Oregon, Onami, Wave Energy Trust. There's a whole bunch of states, government-sponsored enterprises here, GSEs. And I suggest you look at the track record of all of them to learn from that before you proceed with this. I also get to a question that Representative Lindsay has asked about this coordination function. I've read the bill several times, pretty carefully. I don't really see that coordination function in there explicitly. So if you're hoping that's going to happen, you should discuss where in the bill it's going to happen. And if it's not in the bill, I guess you should put it in the bill. In conclusion, I don't want to be totally negative. I do like Section 10, which repeals the Oregon Growth Account. If you deleted everything else and made that the whole bill, that would be a good day's work for you.
Thank you, John. Mr. Winters.
Legislative record, I am James Winters, the CEO of Blue Leopard Capital. Chairperson Benson, Chairperson Hunt, and members of the committee. I'm sure you've gotten my correspondence and several other people's correspondence about supporting the bill. However, I felt it necessary to appear here in person and in the house of Hatfield, Whitaker, and McCall and get my point across that the investment capital and the programs that currently exist, however well-intended, are not reaching people of color. I think it's well-documented that there are some misconceptions when it comes to minority-owned businesses that we're somehow laden with failure or prone to going out of business at the earliest possible moment. And the bottom line today is that 98% of all minority-owned businesses have one or two employees. And when you look at the problems in places like Northeast Portland, where I grew up, a lot of it is because these kids just don't have jobs and no one is willing to take a chance on them. And back in the day, there were businesses like Paul Knowles, Richard Sevier's, and McKinney Insurance and people like that that hired the kids, sponsored the Little League teams, and paid money to put their names in a church bulletin. But now we have is a situation where there's just nothing but sole proprietorships. And I think the flexibility that the bill gives, to the extent that it's going to provide capital for all of Oregon's residents or Oregon's businesses and not just a select few, to that extent, the sponsors of the bill and Governor Kishopper and Treasurer Wheeler should be commended for taking a step outside the box. I did want to kind of address what Representative Bent said, because I think that's a good a fair question to ask. Why should the state be involved in something that is clearly and historically private enterprise? And my response is because everybody is not getting access. For whatever reason, everyone is not getting access. So I just appear here to say I support the bill and will answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for this panel, Representative Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not for the panel, but maybe for Representative Reed. Or if you don't know the answer, maybe you can point me to someone who does know the answer. It says here that the funds are provided from the Oregon Lottery while returns from the investments made by the fund help fund education. My question is, what happens to the losses? How are those played out? Because there won't always be a return. There may be losses, and how are those allotted?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lindsay, the returns, as the Oregon Growth Account has, it would follow the Oregon Growth Account model, which when they have captured returns, go back to the Education Stability Fund. When losses occur, they are simply losses.
Follow up? Or do you?
I understand their losses, but to the fund?
Yes.
Okay.
Questions for this panel? Yes. Representative Sheehan.
Thank you. John, you mentioned the 7.9% negative rate of return. How does that compare with private sector investments in similar markets over that period of time?
I believe over the period of time since 1999, most would be up. Certainly my own investing is up. Not every single year, but in that, and I don't even get much advice on it. But that, again, that's a question. I don't mean to be critical of the people running the fund, to the extent that they should be here to answer those questions, make their own defense for themselves, compare their performance with other metrics and then address the question, you know, the hazard question of how much skin do you have in the game and who bears the risk-reward. That's the real problem that leads to excessive risk-taking, in my view, is when that risk can be shifted to other parties.
Can I follow up on that? I had an opportunity to read that same report. It does go on to say that the structure of the fund somewhat limited the type of investments, and that was a one factor in the low rate of return. Also, I did do some research. In any way, shape, or form, that's poor performance, but it wasn't too far off from similar investments over a similar period of time.
Thank you. Yes, Representative.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. The John, question, and feel free to other panelists to answer the same question. Your advice to look back at what we've already done and learn from it. If we set aside the lesson that I know you would prefer, which is don't do any of that crap, just, you know, dump land use regulations, environmental regulations, have a more regressive tax system, cut public services, and gut any institution that hires a public worker. And if we didn't do that in this bill, but if instead we were saying, what's the smartest way for us to do state investments? Are there any other lessons that we could learn that would, you know, increase reward, minimize risk, or reduce risk from your, you know, look at the experience?
Representative, without commenting on the first line of assertions in your statement, I'll just say that I personally have no way intellectually of solving the problems associated with the entire alphabet soup of state-run sort of pseudo-venture capital firms. I don't think those problems can be solved. Furthermore, I don't think it's an appropriate function of government to even be in that business.
Okay.
And when I listened to a previous witness from a large bank talk about how this very risky emerging group, they're not getting the money they need from the private sector, so the government should step in. To me, that's the point where you run as fast as you can from that. Because if the private sector decides it's too risky for them, why in the world would you take public money and put it at risk? So it's just not a function of government. There are other things you can do to simply make the state a more attractive place to invest.
Can I answer on that too?
Please.
I wanted to follow up on something that Representative Lindsey said about the taxation, because I think that there is either a perception, or not just a perception, there are some mechanisms in place that don't necessarily discourage investment, but don't encourage it. And I think that, you know, that should be on the table as well. Following up on what the gentleman just said, is that anything that increases the pool of investment capital, the opportunity for investment capital coming to the state, should strongly be looked at. But as far as having the state involved, I mean, you look at the page 17 of this bill, in section 25C, it says investments in startup and expanding business in minority and women business enterprise and emerging growth business can produce substantial positive returns for long-term investors. Then how come we're not getting any investment? And that is a function when the legislature and the state government has to step in and stand behind its own proclamation.
Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As someone who's been involved in the development of this bill, I feel compelled to say a couple of things based on the last bit of conversation. The first thing is, voters have told us that we need to be involved in the economic development arena. So I think it's clear we should be doing that as effectively as we can. The point about a lack of the performance we want in the Oregon Growth Count seems to me to be making the argument for doing things differently. And if I understand some of the criticisms so far, there have been people have been pointing to sideboards that are too rigid. That's part of what's in this bill, too, to break down those sideboards. In fact, the idea of having skin in the game is very much the motivation to make leverage part of the evaluation as to decisions the board might make. Again, this is a private sector board that's going to try to capitalize on the competitive advantages Oregon has. And I would also point out that Oregon Inc., which was referenced in Mr. Charles' testimony, has about a 7-to-1 ratio. For every dollar that the state spends, $7 come back to the state. This is, I think, something that makes sense for us to improve what we're doing. The philosophical arguments will remain. There's no question about that. But everyone ought to be able to agree that we want to make things as effective as we can.
Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Charles, this would be for you, because relating to clause on this is investment and economic development. Would you find this bill acceptable if we had an amendment where we repealed Senate Bill 100 and also eliminated DEQ? Then would this be truly a great bill at that point for you?
It's the handiest bill that may spoil it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Widener, I guess I can't really comment on that. I think there is a role.
I can. I would love it. I'd walk out of here ecstatic. I would be voting 10 times.
There's a role for land use planning. There's a role for environmental protection. And I think putting those aside, obviously they could be reformed quite a bit, along with a lot of other things in the state. And I think that would be a better use of time to look at reforming those things.
Further questions for this panel? Thank you very much. And we have one final panel, and that is Jack Kesselman, Mark Stevenson, and Jody Weiser. Let's go with Jack first. Go ahead.
Co-Chair Bentz, members of the committee, for the record, Jack Kesselman, appearing before you on behalf of the Oregon Bioscience Association. I have submitted a letter in support of House Bill 4040. We are very pleased by the introduction of this bill. For quite some time, we've been coming before this committee and this body and other governmental bodies throughout Oregon talking about the access to capital chokehold that exists to more rapid expansion within our life sciences industry. The problem progressed to such a degree that together with our partners at the Oregon Cluster Network, we convened an Access to Capital Day here in this very building last May. A number of you attended it and promised legislative action. We believe this bill is in part your follow-through on that commitment. We thank you for that, and we encourage your support of House Bill 4040.
Thank you.
Chairman Bentz, Chairman Hunt, and members of the committee, thank you for having me here this morning. I'm Mark Stevenson. I'm President and CEO of Capital Pacific Bank, and also here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association as chair-elect. I might point out the Oregon Bankers Association consists of 52 member banks, 32 of which are headquartered here in Portland. Capital Pacific Bank is a $185 million community bank based in Portland. We have been in place for about 8.5 years and doing quite well. I am here to lend support to the Oregon Investment Act. You know, if it's done right, I believe quite strongly that it can lead to meaningful economic development, which would be good for Oregon and good for business. It will, I believe, lead to increased flexibility and coordination of the state's economic development resources, as we heard from some of the other people that have testified here today. I also really like the intent to create public and private partnerships, which I think is really critical to having this thing be successful. Our industry, as a banking industry, has been very satisfied with Business Oregon's management and focus on partnerships with banks to leverage resources and manage risk. They've been in place for years. We've worked with them on a number of different programs, including the Capital Access Program and the Credit Enhancement Fund. And I look forward to Oregon Growth Board's enhancement of programs that leverage our expertise in providing credit and equity to Oregon businesses. Earlier when I said done right, and I know there were a lot of questions that came up about this earlier, I'd like to clarify what I mean by done right. I think there's a couple of really key ingredients. One of them is governance. You know, I think there have been, sounds like there have been some failures in the past, but I think that in terms of governance for this, it's going to be important to keep politics out of the investment decision. The board would appropriately, and I've looked at the act, and, you know, I think it's pretty broadly based, but my guess would be that this is how it is intended but from some of the comments I've heard here, but that, you know, the board would set investment standards and policies, strategic focus, provide oversight, and ensure transparency, which most boards typically do. But it would be important to stay out of the way of good investment decisions and not to micromanage that process. Expertise is important. I think Representative Reed touched upon this, as well as the individual from Cascade Policy Institute, is that it's important to hire the right expertise, hire investment managers with appropriate experience that are relevant to the type of investment. You know, so if you're talking about venture capital, you're talking about something that's more upstream and to like equivalent of private equity, that you hire people that have good track records, that know what they're doing, and can make good investment decisions. And I also heard, and I agree with that as well, is that there should be skin in the game. We know that one of the reasons we got into this economic crisis is there were a lot of investment banks that did not have that skin in the game. And I think that will be important if they're putting their money in alongside any other resource, whether it be private or public, there's much more greater chance for success. And it may mean that in the end it costs more. I mean, some of the best investment managers may cost more, but I think the key criteria needs to be to get someone that's qualified to be able to make these investment decisions. If we're going to attract private dollars, and again, I think this is the one of the most key critical things in terms of gathering money to support this program, including government dollars, the real parameter should be looking at investments that are seeking an appropriate market rate risk-adjusted return. And regardless of any other tax credits or incentives that may exist for an investor in a fund. So, for example, in the 529 funds, when someone puts their money in, they may get a tax benefit in the form of not having to pay tax on that income and maybe the tax credit that comes in from the state. But underlying are funds that are expected to perform well, consistent with any other fund investment option that an investor may have. So that means balancing risk and reward, to put it simply. If you're familiar, I know we had someone here from the Oregon Community Foundation today. If you're familiar with program-related investment or mission-related investment, there's two very distinct concepts there. And a program-related investment, a foundation may make an investment, whether it be equity or debt, that is really below market and not necessarily appropriate risk. In many cases, the foundation is willing to actually sacrifice that because they're looking at it almost like a grant. In the case of mission-related investment, that would be where a foundation is making an investment, equity or debt, that's really coming out of the corpus of that organization. And so in that situation, the investment manager for the corpus of a foundation needs to be making investments that really meet the return and risk parameters associated with that foundation's investment criteria. So I'd like to finish by expressing our appreciation as an industry and myself personally to Treasurer Ted Wheeler for supporting this and being a champion of this, Representative Reed and others who have brought this legislation forward. And as an industry and as a bank, we look forward to continuing to partner with Treasurer Wheeler and the Oregon Legislature in terms of making the Oregon Investment Act a success. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jody.
Jody Weiser with Tax Fairness Oregon. Our organization really likes the idea behind this bill because, as the Oregonian said the other day, we don't even know how much we're doing about economic development in our state. We don't know. We have so many different programs in so many different places, and there's really no evaluation. I was looking today at enterprise zones, and there are some businesses where we're giving them $9,300 a year worth of subsidy and unpaid property taxes per job. And that's way more generous than any of the bills before us that would subsidize jobs. And so, you know, nobody's really looking at all of these different things that we're doing. And so getting somebody who's really putting time in day after day, getting a group of people to do that is really important. One of our objections to the bill is that the group of people on the board seem to be more geographic and politically representative than skill set representative. And so we like the -4 amendments because they address that problem with the bill. We also like the -6 amendments because obviously this isn't an emergency and it's going to take time to get the people appointed, so there's no reason to kind of rush through the process. But there are three places in the bill, Section 20, Section 23, and Section 25, that talk about emerging growth businesses that have significant high-skill, high-wage employment. And yet our state doesn't have a definition for significant, and it doesn't have a definition for high-wage jobs. And in fact, high-wage for some of our programs is anything above the median, which is about $33,000. And we really, if we are subsidizing jobs that at that rate are encouraging our per capita income to drop rather than encouraging our per capita income to rise. There was a report in December from Good Jobs First called Money for Something, and Oregon got a D minus in that report. We were fourth from the bottom for not having job standards attached to the programs that they looked at, job standards that require a certain level of wage, certain level of benefits, look at things like if you hire all contract workers, do you have any requirements for them, or because they're no longer your employees? And so the paperwork that you have, a couple pages from that report. The first one just says how they graded the states, and the second two pages are just, there's a 22 pages or 23 pages of what different some states are doing. I just pulled out a couple pages to give you samples so you could look at what some of the other states are doing about job standards. And third, there's a section in the bill that talks about creating something that would encourage citizens like you and I to invest in venture capital by giving us a capital gains tax break. And the idea that's been suggested is the 529 program. The problem with the 529 program is it's essentially both kinds of Roth, both kinds of IRAs. It's a traditional one and a Roth one. You don't pay capital gains going in and you don't pay capital gains coming out. Representative Wands, capital gains bill for this session makes better sense. It's only rewarding those people whose ideas were successful. They supported a successful company, and so obviously those are the companies that are bringing jobs to our state, and that would be a better model to be looked at. If you look at the tax expenditure report for the 529 program, it only records the cost going in. It doesn't record how much we've lost in revenue, because as that money comes out and goes to kids' education, there's also going to be some capital gains that's not taxed. And so I think you need to be very careful about that. Also, the mechanism says somebody else will decide how much money it will be invested out of the state's revenue stream, instead of you guys saying, we think we need another $50 million. Let's get it out of the general fund and put it where we want it. So you create this mechanism, and you don't know whether it's going to cost the revenue stream $10 million or $110 million, because you don't know how many people are going to jump into the program. There's no cap on the concept, and that leaves us without any kind of control over what the size of the cost is. Representative Bentz, I appreciate your questions about why the state should be in the loan business, because it is a good question that the job of investors, whether they're banks or credit unions or insurance companies or private investors, is to take on risk. And it's becoming, because of this financial crisis particularly, a time where government, whether it's the federal government or state governments, are taking on risk. And we should at least be looking at making sure that's a temporary thing, rather than that becomes one more thing the government's responsible for, and somehow it's equal to our responsibility for education and incarceration and medication, which are really our core responsibilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When there's a loss, and there will be a loss, who is held accountable, and how are they held accountable?
Uh,
I'm not sure what's contemplated in this bill, but I would think in, you know, most normal situations, you're going to have a combination of the investors that are, you know, having to bear that, which include government and private resources, as well as the investment manager, which, you know, should have skin in the game. But that would be as it relates to, you know, the allocation or actual investments that are being made out of any fund.
Right now, the Oregon Growth Account has investments. I have a page in front of me. It looks like there's about two dozen venture capital funds that we've put money into, or we've committed money to, adding up to $109 million. And that's money that was put away for savings, and it's a part of our savings, and it's at risk. But, you know, probably there'll be return on some of them and losses on others. And you hope, if you're a venture capital investor, that you're doing better there than you are in the regular stock or bond market. And generally, that's true. But I think 70%, I think I've read that 70% of venture capital, you know, things fail. It's the 30% that succeed that get venture capitalists to invest. And I think to the John Charles' point that we're, the fund is down, I think that's partly because what happens in venture capital investing is you put money in over time. My investment advisor has me in venture capital investments, but only two of five things that we're in have been sold. So two of them are still, the money is just sitting out there in the companies that we invested in. Of the two that have sold, one of them made about 300%, and the other one lost about 30%.
We have one.
Just have a follow-up to that.
If we could keep the answers very short, we have another person to testify, and then we have to have a little discussion. So please, but short, succinct.
You know, I know, like Oregon Community Foundation has an investment manager that oversees a number of funds. So if you have a 401k fund with a trustee, then there are going to be a number of different funds, and from time to time you're reviewing the performance of those funds. And if they're adhering to the criteria and the performance expectations, if they're not, then you replace them. That's one form of accountability, again, at the fund level.
Representative Sheehan, did you have a question? You had raised your hand earlier. No?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. Our final witness is Jim Coonan. Is there anyone else that's going to testify on this bill? Please come up.
Good morning, Representative Vince Hunts. My name is Jim Coonan. I'm representing myself today in support of House Bill 4040. I've got a lifetime long-term interest in entrepreneurial activity. I just stepped down from as chair of the Oregon Entrepreneurs Network. I'm doing some advisory work in Central Oregon. I run the Ben Venture Conference and through OEN helped to draft OEN's initiative of supporting entrepreneurial development in rural environments. I'm also the creator of the Oregon Angel Fund. The Oregon Angel Fund was created about 5 years ago. It's an angel-directed fund. Currently has about 90 members. They invest in Oregon companies. And it's a good example of partnership between state and the private sector. In this case, over that time period, the Oregon Angel Fund has invested in 18 different companies. About $8 million has been invested in those companies. $5 million of that has come from private investors and $3 million from the Oregon Growth Account. During that period, there have been no failures, and that's frankly not to be expected. You should expect failures, but in this case, of those 18 companies, we've had no failures. Three successful exits. They've also been able to attract follow-on investments of $45 million and generated close to 500 jobs. They've accomplished this all during the worst downturn in recent memory. Thanks goes to Eric Rosenfeld, who is the manager of that, matching dollars from the Oregon Growth Account, and the angel investors that, of course, drive this process. This year, there are some 90 investors in the Oregon Angel Fund. And today has become the most successful and largest angel fund in the state of Oregon. I'm here today in support of the Oregon Investment Act in the hope that more such locally based, well-managed entities can be developed in Oregon to support Oregon entrepreneurs. We now more clearly understand the importance of entrepreneurs in our economy. The Kauffman Foundation did a very interesting study. They looked at job generation over the last 30 years in the United States. They found that 100% of all jobs generated, the net jobs, came from companies 5 years and less. That's not to say that companies older than 5 years were not generating jobs, but they were offset by other companies that were losing jobs. So it really underlies the importance of entrepreneurial activity in our environment. What I see is the opportunity from the Oregon Investment Act. Not only does it give us the tools to compete with other states, I heard earlier mentioned what Ohio is doing, Oklahoma is another good source, Utah, but it will provide us the overall direction, which I feel today is lacking, and hopefully with the capability of increasing the amount of access to capital through more Oregon-based entities. While still providing local economic development managers the flexibility they need and avoiding unnecessary bureaucracy. I would close by encouraging this group to ensure that the board is made up of business people that are familiar and capable in this area of entrepreneurial development and to make sure that they drive this process in the appropriate fashion. Thank you for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Benz, Co-Chair Hunt. For the record, J.L. Wilson, representing Associated Oregon Industries. Our Board of Directors endorses House Bill 4040. I appreciate the testimony of the gentleman preceding me, and the Oregon Bankers Association would like to piggyback on that. But the issue, at the end of the day for AOI, the issue is one of competition. Oregon has to compete, and we're competing hard with 49 other states who want the same industry growth, the same business growth, the same job growth that we're competing for. And we think it's very appropriate that we revisit our economic development tools and put us in a position to compete in a better place for that industry and job growth. And we think House Bill 4040 is the right way to go about it. So we support the bill.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you very much. Oops, I'm sorry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And we'll take answers from either member of the panel. It might also be a question that that Tobias, you could offer either online or offline. And to be clear, as is obvious by the list of co-sponsors on the bill, I like the bill. One question I had is when it lists so that the state can be engaged in grants and loans, and I know sometimes we'll be taking an equity stake, are there times when we want to be making grants without taking an equity stake? And in what circumstances is that a smart move for the state and why?
Yeah, I'll take a shot at that. I mentioned that OEN has developed an initiative to support entrepreneurial development in rural environments. Part of that is creating infrastructure in places that are difficult to, or more difficult to create entrepreneurial activity. So one of our earlier speakers, we actually got a grant from the Oregon Community Foundation to provide programmatic dollars to support the first accelerator in Central Oregon. An accelerator is meant to help encourage and increase the odds of these kinds of companies being really fundable and increase the odds of success. So that's a spot where if you just created on the local. Now, local community has stepped up. Individuals are contributing. Deschutes County is contributing. But without Oregon Community Foundation support, or in another role, this support that could come from the government, that sort of entity would not be created.
Well, very helpful answer. So, I recognize, I have an understanding, basic understanding of how we evaluate the success of a loan. It gets paid back. I have relative understanding of what it means, of how we would evaluate taking an equity stake, how much it grew or didn't. Do we have any thoughts, and maybe it's just a charge for this group to be thinking about going forward, but do we have any preliminary thoughts about how we could best evaluate grants such as the one you're talking about, which sounds great and sounds like I would be in favor of it, but how we'd best evaluate it to lay it against the other investments we might be able to make?
Yeah, in our case, you know, we have specific metrics that the Oregon Community Foundation asks us to achieve, and they include such things as, you know, how many how much investment has been made in these companies, how many successfully go through the program, how much follow-on investment is made, how many jobs are created. I mean, there are some very specific metrics that you can guide the success or failure. Not all of these are going to be successful, but the metrics can be clearly defined. I don't know if you have a comment.
That's really helpful. Thanks.
Further questions of this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Colleagues, a couple of things before we close this public hearing. There will be another amendment that I will be bringing, having discussed it with various members of the committee, -5, which we'll look at on Friday or Wednesday. And the concept underlying the amendment is to sunset this bill in July of 13. Not because I want to sunset it, but because I want to make sure that there is an appropriate degree of care expressed by the board if this bill passes between now and a year from now. So when it comes back, these incredibly important issues are appropriately and seriously placed before us. And this, I'm just saying this is a very good bill. There's a lot of really good opportunities in it. On the other hand, there are some great challenges in it. We've heard about them this morning, and I'm not inclined to, in this short session, create something that I'm not quite sure the outcome of might be. And therefore, that's my approach to addressing that particular difficulty. I wish there was something less aggressive than a sunset, but I will be proposing that on Wednesday, and you can think about it between now and then. Yes, Representative Sheehan, did you have something?
Yeah, I have a question, Mr. Chair, or Representative Reed. This might be for either one of you. I have some. I'm wondering about the legislative intent of the original bill, and that, because this comes from the Education Stability Fund, right? That's where this money is comes out of, and recognizing that you have a variety of different risk and reward mixes in any investment portfolio. I have two questions. The first is, was it the legislative intent to create a high-risk, high-reward investment vehicle, or was it economic development? And the second is, if you could have a crystal ball and look and see the 7.9% loss over 13 years, would that have been considered an acceptable potential loss at the time?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sheehan, you have jumped into a worthy philosophical and existential discussion we've had in the Revenue Committee over a number of occasions. So I'll speak for myself. I don't think that if we were setting up the ideal design, a mechanism to encourage economic development would best be situated in the Education Stability Fund. However, that is where we are, and it's in the Constitution, so that provides some limitation. You've also touched on what is very much at the heart of this dilemma, which is economic development versus monetary returns. When those two things line up, it's great, but often they don't. And often, I think, again, speaking only for myself, I think that's one of the challenges that the growth account has confronted, in that they've been charged to try to do both. And if your primary goal is monetary return, you're probably going to make different decisions than if your primary goal is economic development. So I think that's part of what we're trying to rationalize here, is to align and make sure that those goals are clear. You're right to point to the fact that the existing dollars are in this bill would come from the consolidation of the growth account, but it's also clear that I think many of us hope that this could be looked at as a proof of concept, that if we get this right, if we answer the legitimate questions that have been raised, we're going to be able to generate the confidence to invest significant dollars into what comes from the policies and recommendations of the Growth Board. Because I think that is what it's going to take to make a real difference for Oregon. I mentioned Ohio an earlier time. Their effort is close to $1 billion that was approved by their voters after the initial phase of their Third Frontier program went well. Voters liked it and approved an expansion. So I hope that we'll have an opportunity to have a similar experience.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and again to Representative Reed. One of the biggest selling points in my mind is the consolidation point. And I've searched like crazy in here. I don't see it. Maybe I've missed it. But is it section
10?
10. I'll look at. But that's one question I'd like to. We can follow up offline or not. But I'm trying to find the explicit language.
Okay, let's follow up.
We're discussing on this. I just want to mention one thing before I close the public.
Actually,
I'm sorry,
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Widener.
I think when we come back on Wednesday after hearing what your amendments are going to be, I'd be kind of curious to listen to some of the investors and everything and their response, knowing that there's a sunset in 13, because it might give people cold feet on touching this, and I just would like to hear from them possibly on Wednesday to just see where they're at and make sure everybody's okay with that. I'm all for the sunset. I'll be very supportive of the sunset, but I'm just wondering if it might harm this vehicle in some way, knowing that it can be pulled out from under them right after it got started.
Mr. Chair, maybe I can clarify. Yeah. What I understand your intent to be on the sunset is not so much where we're headed in terms of themes and recommendations and so on, but to clarify that the Growth Board would not have the authority to do any of the things it contemplates without the express authorization of the legislature. So I certainly support your interest in hearing from others, but my expectation would be that that is more of a clarification that the legislature will have to authorize policy changes, and I would be surprised if that dampened any enthusiasm for people's participation in the process to identify those recommendations.
And if I may, Professor White, your concern is well founded. My thought has been that this bill aspires to great things, and if managed appropriately, can achieve them. But there's a lot of work to be done by the board if the bill passes between now and a year from now. And at that time, that group can come before us or some group like us and say, this is what we've done, this is what we propose, and it'll be a much more clear vehicle, if you will. At least that's the way I've thought it through. My observation over the past 4 years has been that we've not spent enough time with these kinds of discussions or these kinds of devices. This is a great platform to work from. That's how I see this bill. And one comment, I did catch Mr. Winters mentioned that it's all about growing the pool of capital, and I agree with him completely. That's what this is about, and how we do that in the most effective way, and I look forward to the further discussions on Wednesday. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4040, and going to roll over House Bill 4040 and roll over House Bill 4150. Patrick, is there anything else we need to roll over?
Sure.
So I safe to gavel out. We are adjourned.
And an all.